Good evening, and welcome to your KMUD News. I'm April Lewis, reporting for KMUD from our studios in Southern Humboldt. Before the news, I'd like to invite you to support our spring drive, April 13th to the 22nd. Your donation helps us broaden our programming and keep you up to date with local news. Go to kmud.org and click the donate button. You can also give us a call at 707-923-3911. We really appreciate any amount you can give. Every day it costs $1,600 to run the station, that's $66 every hour, or about a dollar per minute. Our CPB funding isn't coming back anytime soon, as the Corporation for Public Broadcasting has officially dissolved, and now our members account for one quarter of our funding. To keep our news broadcast going, we need your help. I'd like to emphasize that without this funding, without your donations, we will struggle to maintain the emergency and breaking news coverage that we have brought you in the past. That includes coverage in North Mendocino and areas of Southern Humboldt with elevated fire risk, especially in this dry year. As your news director, I would like nothing more than to bring you the most comprehensive, accurate, and up-to-date emergency coverage possible. But we need the staff and resources to make it happen. Please help us as we continue to provide this essential service. Please donate. The membership drive will be this month from the 13th to the 22nd, and we appreciate all of you who have given your money and time to help KMUD. You can give at kmud.org and click the green donate button or give us a call at 707-923-3911. And now, the news. Welcome to your KMUD local news. We'll start off with a rundown of today's top stories, followed by in-depth reporting from our news team. Also, a correction. Please note we misstated the name of a media partner of ours from yesterday for a special public affairs presentation, who is Mendo Local Public Media, published by mendolocal.news. We accidentally stated the name of another Mendocino County-based publication in its place. Tonight's broadcast includes stories on a Humboldt Legal Assistance Fund for immigration-related issues, the Fort Bragg Council discussion on a bill to modernize forest management, and Humboldt sponsors giving over $100,000 to local youth. Welcome to the Rundown. First, a warning that the following contains details that are graphic and involve sexual assault and suicide. In state news, Representative Eric Swalwell has resigned from his post in Congress. This follows allegations of sexual misconduct and sexual assault of a staff member. KMUD News had previously reported on Swalwell dropping out of the race for California governor earlier this week. The allegations of sexual assault also include two occasions where Swalwell took advantage of the victim while she was too intoxicated to consent. California Governor Gavin Newsom called a special election for August 18th to fill Swalwell's seat. Republican Congressman Tony Gonzalez also announced his resignation from Congress within hours of Swalwell's on Monday. Gonzalez was accused of forcing a staff member into a sexual relationship, and the staffer later killed themselves. Gonzalez made his resignation effective nearly immediately and is now out of office. Texas Governor Abbott has not set up a date for a special election to fill the seat. New York Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said of the resignations, "I'm glad that Eric Swalwell is leaving. I'm glad that Tony Gonzalez is leaving. Frankly, I think Corey Mills should probably be on that list as well." Accusations against Representative Mills, including dating violence and sexual misconduct, including those by a Florida Republican state committee member who accused Mills of threatening to share lewd photos publicly in response to breaking up their personal relationship. The congressional departures are the most significant since the height of the Me Too movement in 2017 and 2018. Locally, Representative Jared Huffman moved his endorsement for governor from Swalwell to candidate Tom Steyer. Huffman was also one of the first House members to call for Swalwell's resignation, calling for a resignation on Saturday, the first House Democrat to do so. Current California Governor Gavin Newsom is facing pressure from political allies to intervene in the messy and unpredictable governor's race, one with no clear frontrunner. CNN reports the governor has been in a marathon of calls and meetings about the race, according to a dozen leading Democrats. We'll update this story and whether the governor will intervene as information becomes available. On Wednesday, a federal jury found that Live Nation, who owns Ticketmaster, operated as a monopoly in violation of state and federal antitrust laws. The ruling could lead to divestments by the company or even a separation of Live Nation from Ticketmaster. Damages will also be awarded, with amounts to be set by a judge based on the jury's findings. The case follows years of criticism towards ticketing policies, with some venues accusing Live Nation of threatening their way to a monopoly. In Mendocino on Sunday, officers of the Fort Bragg Police Department were dispatched to a report of vandalism at the Fort Bragg City Hall, located at 416 North Franklin Street. Upon arrival, officers located the vandalism and began searching for the suspect based on a description provided by reporting parties. Shortly thereafter, officers located and detained the suspect identified as Nicholas Curtula, 27 years of age, of Fort Bragg. Through their investigation and witness statements, Curtula was positively identified and arrested. During the investigation, officers determined there was no direct threats made towards city staff. Curtula was booked into the Mendocino County Jail for a charge of vandalism in excess of $400. Also in Mendocino, on April 10th, deputies from the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office were dispatched to the area of Coyote Valley Boulevard and North State Street in Redwood Valley, California, regarding a reported disturbance involving a juvenile female. Deputies subsequently located the 17-year-old female juvenile in the area. The juvenile appeared to be under the influence of alcohol, was unable to care for herself, and was suffering from an apparent wrist injury. After sheriff's deputies contacted the juvenile, she ran towards an uninvolved vehicle and attempted to pursue it before being detained by law enforcement personnel. Medical personnel responded to the scene and evaluated the juvenile for her wrist injury. During the investigation, deputies contacted the 21-year-old female victim, who reported that the juvenile arrived at her residence at the Coyote Valley Band of Pomo Indians and initiated a verbal confrontation that escalated into a physical altercation. The victim reported that during the incident, the juvenile threw multiple large rocks, striking her arm and causing visible injuries. The incident continued along Coyote Valley Boulevard, where the juvenile threw a rock weighing approximately 10 pounds through the rear window of the victim's vehicle, causing significant damage. During a search of the victim's vehicle, the large rock was located inside near the broken window. The juvenile was taken into custody and booked into Mendocino County Juvenile Hall. Next, a short press release from the Watershed Stewards Program. Join the Watershed Stewards Program, partnering with California State Parks for Heal the Eel, Restoration in the Redwoods, on Saturday, April 18th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the Eel River OHV 4x4 River Access Area, a few minutes north of Phillipsville, along the Avenue of the Giants. Help restore salmon habitat and our native redwood forest ecosystem by pulling invasive ivy near the beautiful South Fork of the Eel River. Come participate in meaningful community stewardship. Gloves, tools, water, snacks, beverages, and pizza will be provided. Make sure to bring a long-sleeve shirt, pants, closed-toe shoes, and a water bottle. The event will happen rain or shine, and all are welcome. The Humboldt County Department of Public Works is preparing to repair damaged pavement and slope failure on the Hammond Trail in McKinleyville. The Hammond Trail will be closed between Murray Road and Knox Cove Avenue from Monday, April 20th through Friday, April 24th, weather permitting. This portion of the Hammond Trail will remain closed for the safety of the public until these repairs are completed. Trail users can travel on Kelly Avenue as a temporary route to bypass the construction work. Other portions of the Hammond Trail not affected by construction will remain open. Repair work will involve sinkhole repairs, embankment stabilization, and repaving. If you have any concerns or questions regarding this project, please call 707-445-7651. In Southern Humboldt News, and first reported by Redheaded Black Belt, Redway's water was briefly shut off on Sunday. Cody Cox, who is the general manager of the Redway Community Services District, first noticed the problem while walking near the Brass Rail Bar and Grill. A leak was spotted due to a broken 8-inch asbestos cement line. This type of outage should not impact the entire town, but in Redway, many of the town's water isolation valves are either seized up or non-functional. This forces full town shutoffs for issues that could have previously been isolated by a larger water system. Fixes are on the way, and Cox stated that 10 new hydrants with auxiliary valves have been installed, with a new 250,000-gallon storage tank expected to arrive in Redway on April 16th. Two Feathers Native American Family Services in Redway is now accepting applications for its 2026 to 2027 Youth Leadership Development Program. They are seeking Native American youth across Humboldt County to apply for one of two exciting leadership positions. This program is for Native American high school juniors and seniors who will gain leadership and job readiness skills while building cultural and community connections. Youth ambassadors receive one-on-one mentorship, participate in community internships, and engage in service projects. The requirements is that you must be work permit eligible and committed to a one-year program. Quote, in Humboldt County, where Native communities face some of the most acute mental health challenges in California, Two Feathers Native American Family Services is taking a different approach, one rooted in culture, connection, and community leadership. For questions, contact Amy Matheson at 707-839-1933 or amy.m@twofeathers-nafs.org. Deadline to apply is May 1st of 2026. California State Parks celebrated the graduation of 36 cadets on Friday, April the 10th. These new State Park Peace Officers, both rangers and lifeguards, are ready to live the park's life in the nation's largest and most diverse state park system. These 36 cadets have reached this milestone through discipline, resilience, and a commitment to public service and public lands, said California State Parks Director Armando Quintero. Their profession is not just a job, it is a calling. These new peace officers are California's guardians of public safety and environmental and cultural heritage, balancing enforcement with education and service with excellence. I am proud to welcome them to State Parks. Over the course of the 32-week Basic Visitor Service Training Academy, cadets complete rigorous instruction to prepare for their roles. Their journey exemplified this year's class motto, quote, "Standing tall, we answer the call," reflecting their dedication to safeguarding the state's diverse landscapes and waterways for current and future generations. During the ceremony, graduates received their badges and were sworn in as State Park Peace Officers, joined by family, friends, and department staff, both in person and virtually. As peace officers, these graduates will serve, protect, and educate visitors across California's 280 state parks while safeguarding some of the state's most significant natural and cultural resources. This year's class of 36 was selected from a competitive pool of over 1,500 applicants. Graduates will be assigned to districts throughout the state, including the North Coast Redwoods, Central Valley, Santa Cruz, Orange Coast, and the Inland Empire. In Arcata, Playhouse Arts presents Bear in the Backyard, an all-ages theatrical adventure filled with shadow puppetry, live music, and laugh-out-loud physical comedy. Part of the beloved Family Fun series by Playhouse Arts, this original live animation production invites audiences into a backyard where anything can happen, especially when a bear shows up. Bear in the Backyard blends live actors, silhouetted performers, cutout sets, and handmade puppets into a playful, visually rich storytelling experience. With its inventive staging and whimsical spirit, the show explores themes of nature, resilience, and the unexpected joys of community, perfect for kids, families, and anyone who delights in a little theatrical magic. Bear in the Backyard is a joyful reminder that sometimes the biggest surprises lead to the most meaningful connections. Sponsored in part by the Humboldt County Office of Education Seats the Theaters program and the Humboldt Area Foundation, the Family Fun series brings nearly 1,000 students to the theater during the week, with a few public showings offered April 24th to the 26th. For tickets and more information, visit playhousearts.org. Lastly, the College of the Redwoods Foundation has announced the launch of the Keith Flamer Legacy Campaign, a new initiative honoring the leadership and lasting contributions of President and Superintendent Dr. Keith Flamer, who will retire at the end of 2026 after more than 11 years as president and over 20 years of service to the college and the region. The campaign will support the expansion of College of the Redwoods healthcare education programs, including 5 new pathways: healthcare navigator, psychiatric technician, surgical technician, radiologic technician, and respiratory technician. These programs are designed to build a pipeline of skilled professionals for local hospitals, clinics, and healthcare facilities. The investment required to bring these programs to scale exceeds $750,000 over the next 3 years and reflects the college's commitment to meeting critical regional workforce needs. And now to our main stories, starting off with Daniel Mintz reporting on Humboldt County considering an immigration-related legal assistance fund.
In response to a group of concerned residents, Humboldt County's Board of Supervisors is considering a universal representation fund to provide legal services for those facing immigration enforcement and deportation. Providing legal assistance aligns with Humboldt's status as a sanctuary county. And although there are questions on where funding will come from, supervisors supported the idea when they discussed it at their April 14th meeting. Several residents of McKinleyville have asked the county to consider a representation fund, and Lisa Dugan, a member of McKinleyville's Municipal Advisory Committee, explained how the proposal originated and how it wouldn't be a first.
So this was really kind of a heart-centered action from our neighborhood who have felt really helpless in light of what has happened with the community of Minneapolis with ICE, and out of concern for our neighbors and what they could be facing as a result. And so as a result, we did some research to find out what is available there for help for them. And in the research, we found that seven or eight other counties in California have set up these universal representation funds. And the funds have been set up differently in each county. Some are doing solely county-based. Some are partnering with nonprofits, such as like we have here, Central del Pueblo in their rapid response network. Some are using the funds generically to support immigrant families or families who have had a family member detained, and some are actually being used for the representation of people detained by ICE who are potentially facing deportation.
As the proposal was discussed, collaborations with nonprofit groups, most notably Centro del Pueblo, and funders like the Humboldt Area Foundation were suggested. During a public comment period, Centro del Pueblo volunteers and staffers said recently intensified federal immigration enforcement has people in fear and is putting entire families at risk. Brenda Perez, Centro del Pueblo's executive director, said her group's scope has become regional and work on legal assistance has begun.
I'm also very proud to say that we are starting our legal resource center in Centro. This is a one-year project for immigrants working with the support of UC Davis Labor Center attorneys. And we are going to focus in providing access and legal pathways for workers. So we want to take out of the gray areas, the gray zones, to the community that is working already, to take them away from abuses, from many things that are happening right now. We want to protect their human rights, and we want to bring those attorneys here. They are coming in during the summer. We're going to have those consultations in place in Eureka. I'm more than proud. This is a huge need, regardless of the context. We have seen different periods, different presidents, and the need continues. So I want to invite the supervisors to please keep going with this conversation.
Perez added that universal representation is a fitting term as the need for legal advice extends to the entire community, including employers. Supervisor Steve Madrone sponsored the discussion and said need for the assistance is time sensitive.
Some would say that because we have a sanctuary ordinance as a county and two cities with that ordinance, we then become a target. You know, I think we're small enough to where that may or may not be true, but the bottom line is that even when that ordinance was being developed, there was a lot of opposition from some government officials around what the cost might be to implement that, which has been proven to not be the case. I am very grateful that we have these ordinances in place, and I don't want to wait until all of a sudden we have families being torn apart and ICE finally shows up in our community doing all kinds of things like we've seen across the country. So I do think now is the time to act. And, you know, while we aren't prepared today with all the information, I would like to direct staff to do a little more digging and bring back some more information on how it might work.
To better understand what it will take to set up a universal representation fund, supervisors directed formation of a working group, including Madrone and Supervisor Natalie Arroyo, and relevant staffers, including the county's public defender. Also included are representatives from Centro del Pueblo and Humboldt Area Foundation. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
And if you want to use me, then you gotta use me too. The Fort Bragg City Council this week stopped short of endorsing a controversial state bill that could reshape how California manages its public forests.
Elise Cox from MendoLocal.news has the story.
On a narrow 3-2 vote, Fort Bragg City Council members declined to support Assembly Bill 2494, a bill aimed at modernizing the state's demonstration forest system, including the sprawling Jackson Demonstration State Forest. Supporters say the bill would move forest management into a new era, one focused less on timber production and more on restoration, research, and recreation. Councilmember Lindy Peters, who introduced the item, framed the proposal as a long overdue update.
My particular interest is changing basically the groundwork that was set forth 80 years ago. And I think this piece of legislation is something that we need to bring us into the modern age of managing and sustaining our forests for carbon sequestration, for a variety of reasons. Recreation, as I mentioned, and let's bring it out to the public and see what they have to say.
But the sharpest pushback came from Councilmember Tess Alban Smith, a self-described environmentalist and former CAL FIRE employee, who had some harsh words for the bill.
So most people know me as an environmentalist. I am, by my education and background. My master's degree was actually about environmental impacts of grazing on UC Davis property in the Oak Woodlands. And I will always fight to keep our city beautiful and healthy. So it might surprise you to hear that, and I speak from the heart, that it is precisely my education and background that motivates me to explain why Chris Rogers' bill is, in my opinion, naive, ill-conceived, redundant, damaging, and should not go forward.
Alban Smith said the current forest management plan already does what the bill claims to fix.
And I agree with some of the sentiments of this bill. I absolutely agree with them. And I understand why people are behind it. And I have heard you. But you need to know that everything in this bill is already addressed in the revised Jackson State Forest Management Plan, including diversity, Native American co-management and involvement, environmental sensitivity, and on and on.
She argued that sustainable timber harvesting remains a critical part of both climate strategy and the local economy.
There's no energy involved in growing a tree. So if you want a manufactured home, 30% more energy. They're non-renewable natural resources. Trees are renewable. Trees are recyclable. They harvest. They hold carbon even when they're harvested. They're still holding the carbon. Your house holds carbon.
Alban Smith framed the debate as a kind of local contradiction.
So this is a case of, in my opinion, NIMBY, not in my backyard. I want wood. I want to build a house, but I don't want those trees to come from my backyard. I don't want any harvesting here. It makes you emotional. I get it. So let's take our trees from Oregon, Washington, or Canada.
She also warned the bill could have unintended ripple effects, even a long-term risk of the forest being sold to private timber harvesters.
Let's not lose $300,000 in timber tax and property tax. State, the parks don't pay anything. They don't pay property tax. This is going to turn into a park. It's going to get sold. It might get sold to a timber company because the state says there's no reason to have this anymore, so we don't want it. So don't mess with a good thing. We got tons of recreation. It's all free, absolutely free.
Some residents questioned whether the council should support legislation that is still being rewritten. Others raised concerns about the future of local input, including the Jackson Demonstration State Forest Advisory Group. Meanwhile, supporters argued the measure could open the door to a different kind of economy, one centered on restoration work, tourism, and indigenous stewardship. The bill's author, Assemblymember Chris Rogers, joined the meeting remotely to respond to concerns and reiterate the bill's primary goals.
As has been noted by a number of the commenters, this bill does not ban timber timber harvesting and timber sales from the demonstration state forest system. And in fact, what it does is create a new lens wherein which we're looking at this through the restorative economy. And I think that that's the fundamental question of this bill and why the county was interested in changing the management practices there is, what is the future economic potential going to be in Mendocino County? Is it going to be based on extraction, or is it going to be based on restoration?
Rogers also pointed to potential new funding streams tied to restoration-focused management.
In fact, this will expand the opportunity to have other funding, whether it's Prop 4 or Greenhouse Gas Reduction Fund or whatever the funding mechanism ends up ultimately being, to enhance the work that is currently being done by CAL FIRE and the forest.
In the end, though, a majority of the Fort Bragg City Council wasn't ready to endorse the legislation.
Madam Clerk, we have a first by Peters, second by the mayor.
Okay. Peters?
Yes.
Hockett?
No.
Alvin Smith?
No.
Vice Mayor Raffnin?
No.
And Mayor Godek?
Yes. All right. So.
Okay. So there won't be a letter.
All right.
But there is an election.
All right. All right, we will then move.
For now, the city will stay on the sidelines as debate over the future of state demonstration forests continues to unfold locally and in Sacramento. For KMUD News and MendoLocal.News, I'm Elise Cox.
Yesterday. Humboldt Sponsors announced their 2026 grant recipients at their annual grant reception. This year, they awarded a total of $104,375, which they spread out over 91 different grants. This is KMUD's Gabriel Zucker with the story. On Thursday, April 9th, 2026, at the Morris Graves Museum of Art in Eureka, Humboldt Sponsors announced their 2026 grant recipients. Each year, Humboldt Sponsors awards grants to local nonprofit youth-related programs and organizations throughout Humboldt County. This year, they distributed $104,437 with over 91 different individual grants. These grants go to local youth activities and programs in the form of scholarships and camperships with the goal of enriching local youth education, recreation, cultural enrichment, and youth leadership projects. The grants also assist youth-oriented programs that provide basic needs and necessities. KMUD talked with Becky Giacomini, one of Humboldt Sponsors' 2026 grant co-chairs. Becky explained where the grants are focused.
These are spread from Willow Creek down to Southern Humboldt and in everything in between. So this is, we do this yearly, and they can apply in January, and then we select them, and then we award them in April. We try to fund different grants that cover education, cultural, anything from lots of swimming lessons. We do camperships. We support the Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, 4-H. And so they have to fit into one of those categories, something that they are doing, something for youth. And so that's the criteria, always has been since 1971. So that's, we make good things happen for local kids, and we spread it out.
Each year, Humboldt Sponsors sends out these grants to a number of different groups and entities. This year, they received almost 45 new applicants, with grant requests from schools, nonprofits, youth sports, and other groups in the area.
This year, we had a number of different groups from schools to nonprofits that are zeroing in on doing swimming lessons for kids. They feel it's very important. So many kids in Humboldt County don't have the opportunity to swim and learn how to swim. So a lot of them were asking for funds for that. We have lots of camper ships that we do from Petrolia to Willow Creek. We do a lot of the arts, from dance. We have so many new ones this year. We had almost 45 new applicants. So there's need out there for all the different nonprofits asking for funds to support their softball, to soccer, to BMX, to horseback riding. So we definitely cover the gamut, and we love doing that. And it's great to have new ones pop up and to be able to support them.
Humboldt Sponsors has been around since 1971, starting off small, but consistently building up more and more each year, giving over $3 million in total grant funds to different youth groups since they started. Giacomini emphasize that anyone can join Humboldt Sponsors.
If you care about kids and don't want to do a lot of the work, but just be able to have a membership and support kids, we'd love to have you.
For more information, visit their website, humboldtsponsors.org. This is Gabriel Zucker with KMUD.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley, and thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Gabriel Zucker, and Elise Cox. If you have story tips, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. I'd also like to remind folks before the end of our broadcast that our spring membership drive is April 13th to the 22nd. Please click the green donate button on kmud.org or call 707-923-3911. Your donations help keep our local news on the air. Redwood Community Radio is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm April Lewis. Stay tuned in.